Yo, what's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. Real quick, do me a favor. Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, and turn on post notifications so you don't miss when we drop new content. Check us out on Apple and Spotify. If you're listening on podcasting platforms, give us a five-star review if you enjoy. So ever since I graduated from college a few weeks ago, I've been spending a lot of time on X. I've been in a few spaces talking college ball with the folks on there. And it seems as if many people have written in pen that Oklahoma is just going to be a middle-of-the-pack team in their first year of SEC play, and I don't really agree with that. So in this episode, I want to talk about what's the best-case scenario for Oklahoma football in 2024. What's the ceiling for the Sooners this year? Also, Paul Feinbaum, the grandfather of college football media, had a bold prediction about Ole Miss that I want to discuss. How improved is LSU's defense going to be this year? Because last year, defense pretty much was non-existent down there. Brian Kelly cleaned house of his whole entire defensive staff. He brings in a new one that's actually really good. And LSU isn't the only team that has made some big changes on defense. USC, they also have a new coaching staff down there as well on the defensive side of the ball, including hiring former UCLA defensive coordinator De'Anton Lynn, who I believe is going to decide the fate of the Trojans this year. And Miami fans, normally every offseason, are really optimistic. But this offseason, though, they're reluctant to drink the Kool-Aid, which is really surprising because if there was ever a year to buy into the Miami Hurricanes hype, it's this one with all the talent that they have on this year's squad. So I'm going to be explaining why Hurricane fans have a reason to actually believe in the hype this year. Before we get into it, here's a quick word from our partner, Mint Mobile. Does it piss you off how much you pay for your monthly phone bill? Why are you getting frustrated when our partner Mint Mobile has plans as low as $15 a month that give you unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network? Stop getting frustrated with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get access to premium wireless for only $15 a month. That's only $15 a month. Switching to Mint is easy. It only takes 15 minutes to do. If you're pissed off with how much you pay for your monthly phone bill, switch to Mint Mobile today and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get premium wireless for only $15 a month. Stop getting upset with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and switch to Mint Mobile today. Oklahoma is one of those teams that people seem to just have written in pen that they're going to be a middle-of-the-pack team in the SEC this year. But I believe there's a ton of upside for this squad to win another 10 games this year. Now, they enter their third season under head coach Brent Venables, and he's shown a lot of growth. His first season in 2022, he won 6 games. Last year, they went 10-3. And at one point, after they beat Texas, I was starting to say, okay, maybe I was wrong about Oklahoma. Maybe they actually are a legitimate playoff contender. And then the week after that, they barely survive UCF. And then they drop a game to Kansas. Then they lost to Oklahoma State right after that. And the season kind of went a little bit off the rails. But ultimately, 2023 was a really good campaign for Brent Venables and company. And going into this season, I expect Oklahoma that have a really good team this year. This defense should finally look like a Brent Venables defense. And the reason for that is because they returned 7 starters on that side of the football. And what has me so optimistic about the potential of Oklahoma's defense in 2024 is the fact that now they have not only a lot of talent on the defensive line, but a lot of depth at that position, which has been the biggest weakness that Brent Venables has faced down there in Norman. A lot of Oklahoma fans have always complained the last 2 years how their defensive line isn't as deep as what it needs to be. Well, you go out and you get the defensive tackle from TCU, who Brian Kelly wanted down there at LSU, and he was really upset that he couldn't get him. He tried to play it off like, man, we okay. Like, we not trying to buy everybody. Like, nah, like, you got the number one quarterback in next year's recruiting class and the number one running back in next year's recruiting class. Like, you're buying players. You're just mad because Oklahoma was willing to invest more in getting this dude than what you were. And bringing him in is going to be a really big pickup for them, because he's going to help improve that run defense. And they also should have a consistent pass rush. They were 91st in the nation in sacks per game. They get a Miami of Ohio transfer from the MAC who had 9.5 sacks. He also had 4 sacks the previous season. They returned 2 of their leading sack leaders from last year and Ethan Downs and Danny Stutzman. And Danny Stutzman, he may be one of the best defensive players in the SEC going into 2024 that not a lot of people are talking about. This dude is a machine. He does a lot for the Sooners defense. He can get after the quarterback. You can send him on blitzes. He's also really good stopping the run, and I think he's pretty decent in coverage as well. And speaking of coverage, how about Oklahoma secondary this year, man? They have one of the best secondaries in the Southeastern Conference going into this year. Last year, they were 3rd in the nation in takeaways, and they got really good safety play. They got a lot of depth at cornerback. There's no reason why we shouldn't see this defense at least be a top 30 unit this year under Brent Venables. But for me, what's going to determine how successful Oklahoma can be this year and if they can reach their ceiling is going to depend on 2 things. 1, their new offensive coordinator, because Jeff Lebby is now the head coach of Mississippi State. And I don't really think losing him is that big of a loss, because in my opinion, he wasn't really that good. And you're going to be replacing him with Seth Luttrell, who got promoted from offensive analyst to OC. He's going to be the full-time play caller, but you're also going to have tight ends coach Joe John Finley, who got promoted from tight ends coach to co-OC. He's not going to call the plays, but he's going to help with the game planning, and he's just going to help oversee the offense along with Seth Luttrell. So it's going to be a concerted effort. So if the offensive coordinator ends up working out, and he ends up being slightly better than Jeff Lebby, think about how good Jackson Dart could be this year. Or not Jackson Dart, but Jackson Arnold. Jackson Arnold, he was the 10th ranked player coming out of the 2023 recruiting cycle. He was the 4th best quarterback out of that class behind Nico and Arch Manning. He also was the Gatorade Player of the Year. And we didn't really see much of him last year until he got the nod as the starter for the Alamo Bowl. And I was really excited to watch him play in that game, because I was like, let's see what this dude has. And he had an up and down debut. You know, the first quarter of the Alamo Bowl, he didn't look good. And then from the second to third quarter, this dude was absolutely on fire. He showed dynamic running ability. He was getting outside the pocket, making some great throws with great touch. He had one throw that he made in the red zone that he threw perfectly on the outside of the end zone that ended up being a touchdown. And then once we got to the fourth quarter, the dude reverted back to playing like how he was in the first quarter. He was turning the football over, making bad decisions with the ball. So it's really hard to gauge what Jackson Arnold is right now. Now, I have confidence that he is going to live up to the hype that he had coming out of high school, because most of the quarterbacks now that are at least top 5 in their class, most of them pan out. And at worst, I think he'll be like above average quarterback, because this dude has a ton of talent. He's like a more athletic and a more juiced up version of Johnny Manziel, in my opinion. And there's no reason why he shouldn't have a successful season for the Sooners this year, because they have a really underrated group of wide receivers. You got Nick Anderson, who was a freshman last year. He tied for the team lead in touchdowns with 10. Then you get Purdue transfer Deion Burks, who was a top 50 player in the portal this year. He was the 8th best wide receiver according to 247. And then at running back, they have one of my favorite players going into this year, and Gavin Sawchuk, he's going to have a breakout season. I don't know why the hell he wasn't starting at the beginning of last season, but he went off during the month of November. And he finished the season with 9 touchdowns, 744 rushing yards. He was averaging 6.2 yards per carry. And when I was watching the Alamo Bowl, me and my homie, this Gavin Sawchuk dude was stressing us the hell out because we had money on Arizona. And once Jackson Arnold started struggling in the fourth quarter, my homie was like, okay, JT, like, we might be in the clear. You think we can turn the game off? I was like, hell no, because if they give the ball back to this Gavin Sawchuk dude, he may end up just carrying them to the win. And that's the reason why losing Jeff Lebby to me wasn't that big of a loss, because if they just would have gave Gavin Sawchuk like 40, 30 carries in that Alamo Bowl game, they would have won. Like, this dude was damn near unstoppable. And Oklahoma, they always are pretty nice with the running backs. I remember they had a running back that played the year before last named Eric Gray. I really liked him. You had Rodney Anderson. You had Joe Mixon. When it comes to running back, I think Oklahoma has a claim for being RBU if they aren't considered that already. And with the talent that Jackson Arnold has around him, you're going to have a really good run game. You're going to have a lot of weapons to throw the football to at wide receiver. I expect him to have Oklahoma at least around 9, 10 wins at best. That's how I see the ceiling being for the Sooners in 2024, because their schedule is manageable. Okay, your first 4 games, you got to play Temple, Houston, Tulane, and Tennessee. You should at least be 3-0 going into that Tennessee game. Plus, you're playing Tennessee at home. Tulane, that could be a tricky matchup. They are the best Group of 5 team entering this year. But Oklahoma has one of the better rosters in college football. Brent Venables has recruited at a top 10 level since he got hired down there in Norman. They also do a pretty good job of utilizing the transfer portal. And Tennessee and Oklahoma, I think they're kind of in the same tier. Both teams have the potential to not just be a factor in the championship picture in this conference, but they also could get into the college football playoffs depending on how the ball bounces. And then after you play Tennessee, you go on the road and you play Auburn. And this is when the schedule starts to get really tough for Oklahoma. This is when we find out just how good Oklahoma truly is. Because winning in Jordan-Hare Stadium is no easy feat. I don't care how down Auburn football is. If you can win on the road in Auburn, you're a pretty decent team. Now, we're just going to forget what happened with the New Mexico State game. I just act like that thing didn't occur because college football is weird. You always have a couple of weird games like that. And you guys being Oklahoma fans should understand that, because you lost to Kansas and Oklahoma State. Like, that was so random. And then after you play Auburn, you got your bye week, and then you got to play Texas. Now, last year, Texas for Oklahoma pretty much was their Super Bowl, because once they beat them, it seemed like they just didn't care about the rest of the season. Then you got South Carolina, which I expect you to win that game. I don't think South Carolina is going to be good this year, but you know they got Shane Beamer, and you can never count out the Beamer boys. Then you got to play Ole Miss on the road. You got to play a school called Maine. And then you got Mizzou, Alabama, and then on the road at LSU to close out the season. I could see Oklahoma winning 10 games this year. And I don't think it's absurd to say that. For the SEC truthers out there, if you look into what Oklahoma has done in recruiting and what they've done in the transfer portal, from a talent standpoint, they have a top 10 roster. And they already beat Texas last year. And I get it's a rivalry game, but anytime you can beat a team like Texas that pretty much pays for the whole entire team, you know, you got to get a lot of respect for that. And if you can beat Texas, you can definitely beat Alabama. You can definitely beat LSU. Like, LSU, we're going to talk about them a little bit later. Like, they overhauled their defensive coaching staff, but they still are lacking at a lot of positions on that side of the football. Oklahoma is one of the more complete teams entering the Southeastern Conference this year. You don't really have too many big holes on their roster. You know, like, they went heavy on making sure that they improved the offensive line in the portal. They got a really good center from SMU. They also got a really good offensive guard from Washington, which both of those dudes should be plug and play. They should be day one starters right out the gate. I'm expecting Oklahoma to come into the SEC and make noise right away. If you're looking for a wild card team and a sleeper team who people are overlooking, Oklahoma definitely is that team. You have a former top 10 player and Jackson Arnold at quarterback. You got Gavin Sawchuk, who should be a breakout player this year. You're deep at wide receiver. This is the most talented that your defense has been in the couple of years that Brent Venables has been in Norman. 10 wins is the ceiling for OU for me in 2024. But for them to be a middle-of-the-pack team in the SEC, I definitely could see it, but I am a believer in Brent Venables. And I believe last year I predicted them to win at least 9-10 games, and that happened. So going into the SEC, you just think about the name. You know, everybody seems to think that Oklahoma still is this Big 12 team, and they're not. This is a team that has been built to win, and they've been built to have success in the SEC based off how well they recruited and how well they have prioritized making sure that they have what they need in the trenches. They have depth, they have talent on the defensive line, they can get after the quarterback, they're going to be able to stop the run this year. Like, look out for Oklahoma this year. This definitely is a team that I would not be willing to bet against this year. If anything, I'm willing to bet that Oklahoma has a better shot at winning the SEC than what Missouri does. Missouri, they return a lot on offense, but they return pretty much nothing on defense, and their coaching staff got raided by LSU. So I'm really high on Oklahoma this year. The ceiling for them, 10 wins, in my opinion. Paul Feinbaum is drowning in the Ole Miss Kool-Aid. He believes that they're legitimate national championship contenders going into this season, and I agree with him. If he's drowning in the Kool-Aid, I'm swimming in the Ole Miss Kool-Aid along with him. I believe this year, Ole Miss is going to be very similar to what last year's FSU team was, but more talented. Because the way FSU assembled their 2023 team is kind of similar to how Lane Kiffin has went about constructing this Ole Miss team. You know, like, they don't dominate in recruiting, but they're not bad in recruiting. They're pretty solid. And then they also mix their solid recruiting in with being absolutely dominant in the transfer portal. And this is a top seven team going into this season. The Lane train is chugging on all cylinders down there in Oxford, Mississippi. Ole Miss, they're coming off their best season in program history. They had their first ever 11-win season. They took down Penn State in their New Year's Six Bowl game. They returned 71% of their offensive production from last year. You got Jackson Dart at quarterback, who should be viewed as a legitimate Heisman contender. And they're stacked at wide receiver. They return, what, 3 out of 4 of their top 4 receiving leaders from last year's team. And plus, they got Juice Wells out of the portal, man. Like, it's just like with the transfer portal, Ole Miss just seems to not be able to miss. And I never knew that Ole Miss had this much access to the kind of money that they've been throwing out there with the NIL and the portal and recruiting. They do lose running back Quinshon Judkins, which definitely does hurt. And it definitely is going to be a loss that they're going to feel. But they got enough talent at running back that they should be able to overcome losing him. And he caused a lot of locker room problems. Great player, but just wasn't worth the headache. You got Useless Bentley, who's a dog. He was averaging 5.7 yards per attempt, and he also had 4 touchdowns. And they recently got Henry Parrish, I believe, who played for my Miami Hurricanes. And I was a little bit shocked to see him transfer out. I thought he was a pretty good back, really powerful. He's going to be somebody who could be really good in short yardage situations. And they went all out in the transfer portal to not just make sure that they improve their offensive line, but they got a lot of help on defense. Their defense was non-existent last year. Anytime you watch Ole Miss play, it seemed like damn near every single game was a shootout. One of the best games from the 2023 college football was Ole Miss versus LSU, because you knew that game was going to come down to whoever got the ball last. LSU got the ball last, but somehow by a miracle, Ole Miss defense was able to get them off the field and seal the victory. Well, this year, there's no more excuses for Pete Golding. If this defense isn't at least a top 40 defense, he has to get the pink slip. You got Walter Nolan, who was the second best player in all of the transfer portal during this cycle. You got a dude who has an extremely hard to pronounce last name from Florida. You got linebacker Chris Paul from Arkansas. cornerback Trey Amos out of Alabama. All four of these guys should have big impacts on improving Ole Miss defense this year. And they also have the SEC's easiest schedule this year. You got to play some school called Furman. Like, let's do a little challenge real quick. Try to point out where Furman University is on the map. I bet none of y'all can do it. You got to play Middle Tennessee State at home. You got Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, Kentucky, on the road at South Carolina. So going into that LSU game on the road before your bye week, you should at least be 4-5-0, 6-0, right? Furman, Middle Tennessee State, Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, Kentucky, South Carolina, 6-0. LSU, you have to play them on the road. We know how tough it is to win at Death Valley, but I'm not convinced that LSU's defense is going to be that good this year. And I really am starting to view Brian Kelly as just a tad bit overrated. It feels like he peaked his first year at LSU because ever since that first season, LSU hasn't really lived up to the hype. And then after that LSU game, you got to play Oklahoma off your bye. Then you got Arkansas, Georgia, another bye week in Florida, Mississippi State to close out the season. What has me so excited about Oklahoma is that their defense is going to be really good, and they also have the potential to be a team that could surprise a lot of people. But Ole Miss, from a talent standpoint, they got the advantage over a school like Oklahoma just with how well they've gone about utilizing the transfer portal. Like, they got some of the transfer portal's best players on defense. Like, a lot of these guys that they have coming in were at least top 100 players or better from 247 and On3's transfer portal player rankings. And when I'm thinking about a team that has potential to benefit greatly from the college football playoffs expanding to 12 to eventually 14 teams, it definitely is Ole Miss. When it was at four teams, it was going to be really tough for Ole Miss to get into that thing because their two worst losses of last year came to Alabama and Georgia, and they lost those games pretty handily. They got smacked by Alabama 24-10, and they just got absolutely obliterated and, you know, sent off the map by Georgia. I don't think that's going to be the case this year, though. I definitely believe that they have a good enough team that they should be able to give Georgia somewhat of a dogfight. And this Georgia game is the only game that I don't see Ole Miss being able to win. Outside of Georgia, every game on this schedule should be winnable for them, and I expect them to win. They should be at least a one-loss team playing for, at least vying for a spot in the SEC championship. And I have them penciled in as a lock for the college football playoffs this year. When it comes to them being the national championship contender, hell yeah. Like, they just beat Penn State in their bowl game. And I wouldn't hear anything about Penn State having all these damn opt-outs when they recruit at a way higher level than Ole Miss. You feel me? So Ole Miss this year, I already told you guys a few months ago, already got my tickets for the Lane train. And I hope that you guys got yours, because that thing is about to leave station and they're about to take off. They are a really hot team that many people have been high on. A lot of people have been talking about Ole Miss. They're not overhyped. This is a season that Ole Miss has been building for a while now. And I don't even think that Lane Kiffin even expected to have Ole Miss in this kind of position. Like, every single offseason, there's always speculation about how Lane Kiffin could leave for another job. And yet, he still continues to remain the head coach of Ole Miss. You want to know why? Because he realizes with this new era of college football, the transfer portal, NIL, you know, he's found a way to work it in a way that he has a good balance between utilizing the portal to get guys who can come in and have immediate impact, but also finding guys that, you know, they may not be able to start right away, but one or two years down the line with some good development, they could turn into impact starters. And then you mix that with recruiting, and that's how you end up having an Ole Miss team that is a lot similarly constructed to what Florida State was last year, because Florida State was doing the same thing. So I expect Ole Miss to be more than just hype. Like, Paul Feinbaugh, he definitely has a point with Ole Miss this year. If there was a team that could win the national championship that isn't a blue blood, Ole Miss definitely could be that team. You know, with everything they have coming back, what they've acquired from the transfer portal, they're going to have a good defense. They should have a good defense. You mix that with how stacked they are on offense, I mean, yeah, they definitely are one of the best teams in college football, and they definitely have a very great shot at winning the national championship. I definitely would have them labeled as a national championship contender. Last year, LSU was all offense and no defense. Man, they just pretty much forgot about the defense side of the football. They didn't really care about it, which is why Brian Kelly cleaned house at the end of the season and assembled an all-star defensive staff in order to turn things around on that side of the football. And if LSU's defense is going to make some large improvements on defense this year, it's mainly going to be because of this new coaching staff. And a lot of the guys that Brian Kelly brought in have deep ties to LSU. They either spent a little time coaching for this program years back, or they played for this school during their playing days. You hire defensive coordinator Blake Baker, who replaces former DC Matt House. And Blake Baker was the defensive coordinator for the past two seasons at Missouri. He also has been the DC at Louisiana Tech and Miami in the past. And his defenses at Missouri were good all across the board in every area. In 2023, they were 28th in points per game allowed with 21.8. They were 38th in yards per game allowed. They were 53rd in the country in third down percentage. They were really good against the run in the pass. So Blake Baker, with him replacing Matt House, I expect this defense to take some small steps in improvement. All right, because he is not just a good defensive coordinator, but he also should be a really hot candidate for some head coaching vacancies when they come open at the end of this year. Now, the position coaches, really for me, is what has me excited about what LSU could be defensively. Because you get Bo Davis, who in my opinion is the best defensive line coach in the sport right now. He has developed 17 all-conference selections and 7 All-Americans, recently those being defensive linemen Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, who also just got drafted really high in this past year's NFL draft. When he was on Nick Saban's staff, when he was spending time at Alabama, he played a large role in the development of Jonathan Allen and A'shaun Robinson. He also helped develop Marcus Davenport at UTSA. He was a former first-round pick by the Saints. And everywhere Bo Davis has been, his defensive lines have always produced at an elite level. And he's worked for some of the best coaches in the sport. And him going to LSU should have that defensive line playing at a way better level than what most of us expect, because LSU still has some really big concerns on their defensive line. They got not a lot of depth there, especially on the interior. And when you're lacking in talent, this is when your coaches and guys like Bo Davis play a large role into helping you somewhat overachieve. Because LSU, they've been really heavy in the portal trying to get some defensive line help, and they haven't really been able to get that. So getting Bo Davis should help elevate the guys that they currently have at that position. Now, I'm not saying that having Bo Davis just automatically guarantees that LSU's defensive line is going to play at a high level. But what I am saying is that I'm not just going to look at their defensive line and just say, yeah, that's going to be a huge liability on defense because they're lacking in talent, because Bo Davis is such a good coach that he should be able to have those guys playing at a slightly higher level than what we expect them to. And they do have talent at that position. It's not like they're completely devoid of talent there. It's just that they don't have enough depth at that position as you would like, because football is still a game that is won and lost in the trenches, which is why we see these defensive linemen such as the guy from TCU getting paid over $1 million by Oklahoma. Because if you can win up front, there's not a single game that you don't have a chance at being able to win. And LSU, I mean, they got completely gashed on run defense, and they weren't really that good at getting after the quarterback. Now, they also brought in Kevin Peoples, who worked alongside of Blake Baker at Mizzou. He's labeled as their edge rusher coach, or their pass rushing coach, which I didn't even know they had a thing called that. I just thought that he was just part of the D-line also. But with him working alongside of Blake Baker and also their new secondary coach and Jake Olsen, who also followed them along from Missouri, you got a good amount of camaraderie. You got some good chemistry there. So you have Bo Davis and you have Kevin Peoples, who should have your defensive line playing at a really high level this year. What about the secondary? Well, you got Corey Raymond and Jake Olsen. And Corey Raymond is one of the best defensive back coaches in America. He was a former LSU player during the 90s. He was LSU's defensive backs coach from 2012 to 2021. And he was part of developing several future NFL draft picks and former All-Americans during his last stint at LSU. You know, he helped develop Eric Reed, Jalen Mills, Jamal Adams, Tre'Davious White, Greedy Williams, Grant Delpit, who won the Jim Thorpe Award under him, and Derek Stingley. So he has an extensive track record of developing and getting the most out of really talented cornerbacks and defensive backs in general. And then you also have Jake Olsen, who follows Blake Baker and Kevin Peoples. He was also their defensive backs coach at Missouri. So you have a lot of LSU ties, but also a good amount of camaraderie and chemistry on this defense when it comes to this new coaching staff, which should pay dividends to making sure that this defense at least makes some small improvements this year. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I like this coaching staff, but I'm not a fan of what LSU has to work with when it comes to a talent standpoint on defense. Okay, they have 71% of their production from last year returning this year, but their defense was terrible. So how much of that production is actually good? We know about Harold Perkins. This dude is a monster. You got Greg Penn III. They're going to be really good at linebacker. You got Major Burns, who people are really high on. Same thing with defensive back Ryan Sage. And you did get a couple of pickups from the portal, but not enough that you needed. And that's why for LSU defensively, I still think that this year is going to be a huge work in progress. Now, I don't expect them to be dead last in nearly every statistical category like they were damn near last year. This defense couldn't do anything. It couldn't get off the field in third down situations, couldn't get stops in the red zone, couldn't create turnovers. This is a defense that they're not going to be great, but they're not going to be as bad as what they were last year, just with how good this coaching staff is. So overall, for me, I still think that this is going to be a defense that isn't going to be good. I think that they make some small improvements, but overall, I don't think LSU's defense is where it needs to be this year in order for them to at least contend for a playoff spot. And looking at the playoffs expanding to 12 teams, you would think that LSU would be a lock to get in that thing, but when you're all offense and no defense, and you don't really get anybody out of the transfer portal but just seven guys, there's no way I can expect your defense to just make a night and day improvement from going from bottom feeder to a top 50 unit. Despite how much I do like Blake Baker and how good of a DC he is, you know, they are going to have to get some more pieces in there because their schedule is tough. You're playing in the toughest conference in all of college football. A lot of teams that you're playing this year are going to have some of the nation's most talented, most explosive offenses. And you're going to need production on the defensive line if you want to be able to slow those guys down. You're going to have to be able to get after guys like Jackson Dart or Jackson Arnold and company. Like, there are a lot of good quarterbacks in this conference. And despite how good they're going to be offensively with Garrett Nussmeier and, you know, how exciting their wide receiving core always is to watch, defensively, they still have a lot of work that needs to be done before I can view them as a playoff team. So I think LSU improved slightly defensively, but still they need some more work in order for them to get to the level that they want to make or that they want to get to this year. USC has a new defensive coordinator. For those of y'all who don't know, he's very good. His name is De'Anthony Lynn. He's the son of former NFL head coach De'Anthony Lynn. And his one season last year at UCLA, being their defensive coordinator, he transformed that defense from the worst in the Pac-12 to the best in the Pac-12 in the span of 1 year. They were 11th in takeaways. They were 34th in red zone defense. They were 15th in the nation in points per game allowed. They had the second best run defense in all of college football, and their secondary played pretty well. Looking at USC this year, and after what I saw in that spring game, I think it's safe to say that the secondary is going to be the meat and potatoes of this team. They have four picks in that spring game. You got a lot of big-time transfers that are going to have a big impact in that secondary, such as Kamari Ramsey and cornerback John Humphrey, who follow De'Anthony Lynn to USC from UCLA. You also got DeCarlos Nicholson from Mississippi State. And then you got a former Florida State cornerback in Greedy Vance. So there's a ton of talent that they bring in from the transfer portal. And they also have a few guys coming back that are going to be really good and making sure that that secondary ends up being one of the better units in the Big Ten. Like, USC, you guys need to pay attention to what they have in their defensive backs room, because they have one of the better secondaries entering the Big Ten this year. And they're going to need this secondary to play absolutely shut down coverage this year, because they are not going to have a lot of help when it comes to the defensive line. Now, we already know about Barrett Alexander. He's a stud. But outside of him, from what I've been reading and what I've been hearing, you kind of got to pray that you have somebody else other than Barrett Alexander that steps up. You got Jamil Muhammad, who has 6.5 stat, or who had, you got Jamil Muhammad, who had 6.5 sacks last year, and he started 2023 off really hot, but then the second half of last year, his play kind of started to dwindle a little bit. You got a transfer from Vanderbilt and Nate Clifton, who had 5.5 sacks, but you're probably going to need some of your younger guys to step up, like Cameron Fountain. He needs to make an immediate impact. He was a 4-star recruit from that 2024 class for USC. He didn't really do too much in the spring game. It's just a lot to be desired when it comes to the front seven of USC's defense. But with De'Anton Lynn, though, and how good of a defensive coordinator he is, if he can make UCLA one of the best defenses in college football in only 1 year, after they were one of the worst the year prior, I don't think there's any reason to expect him not to be able to pull off the same magic at USC, when USC has way more talent than what UCLA had. And although he's going to be facing a step up in competition, because playing in the Pac-12 last year is going to be nothing like playing in the Big Ten this year, I still believe that USC's defense can be good enough where they can have a shot to win the Big Ten, because their offense is going to be great. We know what Miller Moss can do. We know how good Lincoln Riley is with the quarterback position. I'm not worried about offense. I am worried about the defense slightly due to their lack of talent and depth on the defensive line. But when you have a guy who's as talented calling the plays as De'Anton Lynn, he can find a way to scheme around their inefficiencies on the line of scrimmage. Now, there's only so much you can do to overcome not being good on the defensive line, but with him doing the kind of work that he did at UCLA in just a span of 1 year, you mean to tell me that I'm crazy for giving this dude the benefit of a doubt? I mean, UCLA was poverty on defense before he got there, and they weren't really recruiting 5- and 4-star guys out the ass like how USC does. So the talent definitely is there for USC to make a huge jump defensively with De'Anton Lynn. And De'Anton Lynn is going to determine the fate of USC football this year, because if he ends up being as good as the defensive coordinator this year as what he was last year for UCLA, not only are they going to be a team that's going to have a shot to win the Big Ten, but they also are going to have a shot at being able to get into the college football playoffs. The Big Ten is so overrated, and I'm getting so tired of these Big Ten fanboys trying to gas up this conference, making it seem like, man, USC is in for a reality check. They ain't ready for us. I don't think the Big Ten is going to be that ready for USC. The Big Ten only has 3 teams that people cared about over the last couple of years. That's been Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State, and nobody really plays offense in the Big Ten. You know, anytime you have a team that makes it to the Big Ten championship that has no offense but a great defense, that's embarrassing. That shows just how lackluster your conference is in terms of quality depth when it comes to teams. So I think that USC is going to come in here and they're going to shock a lot of people. You know, I think that there's a stereotype that Lincoln Riley can't get it right on defense, and I think it's false, because how can you say he can't get it right on defense when the dude has had the same poverty defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch, ever since he first got the job at Oklahoma? So this is the first year, and probably Lincoln Riley's whole entire coaching career, that he has a new defensive coordinator, not named Alex Grinch. Alex Grinch was so bad that, you know, most people believe that he was not qualified to even be a defensive coordinator. Hell, some people felt he wasn't even qualified to be a position coach. And it definitely was evident, because there were so many games that you watched out of the Trojans' defense where their defense didn't look prepared. They didn't know their assignments. De'Anton Lynn, although he may not have the talent that he may want on the interior, this defense is just going to improve just based off the fact that they're going to know the fundamentals. They're going to know how to more effectively communicate. You're not going to have a lot of blown assignments. And when you're just able to be a fundamentally sound football team and you don't beat yourself, that can make your defense improve as well. But overall, if USC is going to have a bounce back season this year, Dan Lynn is going to be the main catalyst for it. And if he does end up doing the same job that he did at UCLA this season with the Trojans, I expect him to become a head coach. I know he's only been the D coordinator for about going on 2 years, but if you can transform a Lincoln Riley defense from bottom of the barrel to at least above average, you mean to tell me that a lot of programs aren't going to be giving this dude a little bit of an eye when it comes to bringing him in to be their head coach? So De'Aaron Lynn is definitely a name that if you're a diehard USC fan or a college football fan, you need to pay attention to, because if USC has a good season this year, De'Aaron Lynn is going to be one of the biggest reasons for it. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is this. A lot of Miami fans, surprisingly, are scared to drink the Kool-Aid with me this year. And I get why. You know, like, to quote my guy, Rod Wave, Harbin bro so many times, don't know what to believe. It's like, it's always the same story with Miami football every single year. In the offseason, you look at the team and you say, man, this is the best Miami Hurricanes team that we've had since so-and-so year. Then the season rolls around and they never play up to expectations. So I definitely understand why you Miami fans are kind of reluctant to drink the Kool-Aid with me this year. But if there was ever a year to buy into the Miami Hurricanes hype, it's this year. You want to know why? Because this isn't the same Miami team that we have fell victim to the hype machine to in previous years. Miami actually has a true superstar quarterback this year in Cam Ward, and he's the best quarterback in the ACC this year. He clears DJ Uiagalelei. He clears Cade Klubnik. Like, if Cam Ward plays up to his potential, he should be a Heisman finalist this year. You got key transfers in Damian Martinez, who was the number one running back out of the transfer portal. This dude was averaging 6.1 yards per carry at Oregon State last year, 9 touchdowns, and had 1,185 rushing yards on the ground. You got Sam Brown, who was one of the top wide receivers from this year's transfer portal cycle. Mario Cristobal has recruited at a really high level. He also has utilized the transfer portal at a pretty good level as well. And for the fans that are reluctant to trust Mario Cristobal, it's definitely understandable. Poor clock management. We all remember the mishap that he had in that loss to Georgia Tech, just deciding not to kneel the football for some strange reason. And he also has a history of holding back his quarterbacks. But at least when it comes to holding back his QBs, I don't think that's going to be a stereotype that is going to follow Mario Cristobal for too long, because Shannon Dawson runs a completely different scheme that Mario Cristobal normally doesn't run. He runs an air raid spread offense. Mario Cristobal, when he was coaching at Oregon, was more pro style. And with Shannon Dawson being the OC, this is the second season with the program, him having a good quarterback in Cam Ward, who already has a lot of familiarity with the air raid system because he's ran it with his previous two schools. He ran it at Incarnate Word, and he also ran it at Washington State. It pretty much should be Cam Ward picking up from where he left off, but a lot better considering that he's at Miami with way more talent than what he ever had to work with at Washington State. So Shannon Dawson, with the kind of scheme he runs, I'm not expecting for Cam Ward to get held back and fall victim to the Mario Cristobal quarterback curse, because the scheme and the system that Mario Cristobal is allowing Shannon Dawson to run is a system and scheme that he hasn't really ran in the past. He started to change his philosophy when it comes to offense, and he's more modern this year than what he has been in previous years, and that's why I'm excited for what Cam Ward could do this year with Miami. It's not like Mario Cristobal is running the same offense that held back Justin Herbert when he was at Oregon. This is a completely different offense. And a lot of people pay way too much time focusing on history and not looking at the changes that Mario Cristobal has been making with this program and for philosophically wise, because this isn't the same Mario Cristobal that we saw who had that late game blunder against Georgia Tech and was holding back Justin Herbert. Him hiring Shannon Dawson was a big surprise to me because he runs an air raid system. You know, he's a spread guy. He's going four wide. He's not a guy that's going to get too much underneath center. It's way different from the offense that we've seen in past years out of Cristobal. And in his third season at Oregon, he won the Pac-12, and he also won the Rose Bowl. Mario Cristobal has a good track record of being able to build up and develop programs, and normally his third season is where his programs start to reach their peak. So Miami, looking at their schedule, which is extremely favorable, they should be 6-0 before they got to go on the road and play Louisville. Their first five games before that, you got to play Florida, which should be a dub, FAMU, Ball State, USF on the road, Virginia Tech, and on the road at Cal. Those should be five easy victories. The Florida game is a rivalry game, but Florida sucks this year. They're not going to be that good. Billy Napier's coaching for his jobs. And then your biggest games of the season, Louisville on the road, VT, that could be a tricky game, but you should be able to win that one. Then you got Florida State and Duke. And the reason why I have Duke on there is because you got Manny Diaz as the head coach. And I think that Manny Diaz is going to have a huge chip on his shoulder considering, you know, how he kind of was kicked to the curb and replaced for Mario Cristobal. And Miami, I don't really think that they handled it. They handled that situation the most professional way. It's like they still had Manny Diaz employed as their head coach. He was still working, still recruiting. Meanwhile, they're flirting with trying to get Mario Cristobal down to South Beach. And I just didn't really like how that situation played out. And I expect Manny Diaz to have something to prove when the Blue Devils play Miami this year. But overall, if you are a Hurricanes fan that's scared to buy into the hype this year, like if you've been hyped up about Miami football for over the last decade, there's no reason why you shouldn't be hyped up this season, because you have a reason to actually be hyped up. This team is way too good to be trash. Like they paid for this team, man. Like they literally handpicked every single player that they wanted, gave them all the money in the world to get them to come to Miami. Like Mario Cristobal flipped Cameron Ward from the NFL draft, man. Damian Martinez, like this dude is probably going to be one of the highest paid running backs in the nation. Same thing with Sam Brown. Like they have way too much talent on this squad to be trash. And I know just because you buy a team, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to be good. But for Miami, Mario Cristobal isn't a bad coach. You know, he's a above average coach, in my opinion. And he's good enough where he should be able to take advantage of a lackluster ACC. Like, the ACC is down this year. Florida State is not going to be good. Like, I don't know how many times I got to tell these damn Seminole fans that DJ Uiagalelei freaking sucks. He blows, man. They wanted Cam Ward. Them getting DJ Uiagalelei was a downgrade from what they had last year and Jordan Travis. That dude is going to cost them so many games. I can't wait for them to realize it. Like, they keep hyping this dude up when he was terrible in the spring game, bro. Like, DJ Uiagalelei is not good. North Carolina, they're going to be in for a down season. Louisville, they're going to be a middle-of-the-pack team. Like, there's really no team in the ACC that I can look at and say, yeah, like, they should be able to beat Miami in the ACC championship. Like, Miami, to me, right now, is the undisputed best team in the ACC going into this year. Florida State, they're going to be in for a regress season or a regression season this year. You know, I feel like last season was their peak under Mike Norvell, and now he's going to have to take at least a season or two to rebuild that squad back up to what it was last year. I don't think they're at a stage right now under Mike Norvell where they can just relock and reload. For Miami, you have the advantage to take if you have the opportunity to take advantage of a down conference. This may be the worst Power 5 conference in college football this year. So there's no reason why Miami shouldn't win it. If Miami doesn't win the ACC championship this year, I will never, ever believe in the Miami Hurricanes hype ever again. I get that this team and this program has lost us a lot of money, and they cost us a lot of pain the last couple of decades, but 2024 is a lot different. You got Cam Ward, Damian Martinez, you got one of the best rosters in college football. You got the best team overall in the ACC. There's no reason why Miami shouldn't run the table in the Atlantic Coast Conference this year. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. If you enjoy, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel, we're a podcast. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. If you enjoy, please give us a five-star review. We're trying to get to 100 five-star reviews before the start of the season. We currently are at 70, so go ahead, give us a five-star review on Apple and Spotify. Follow us on Instagram at JTSports_ and on X at JTSports_. And I appreciate you guys for tuning in to this episode of the JT Sports Podcast.